Second case for argument this morning is in the matter of Altheimer and Gray. Mr. Alsterda.
Good morning. My name is Scott Alsterda. I'm representing Mark H. Behrens in this appeal today. The primary issue before the court is whether Mr. Behrens, for purposes of Altheimer and Gray's plan of reorganization, was a partner. The second issue is whether the creditor trustee had a duty to object to Mr. Behrens' claim at some point before the bar date expired. The resolution of the first issues, I suggest, are matters of contract construction. What we're looking at are terms in a plan of reorganization and Mr. Behrens' employment agreement. The interpretation of those terms, as we've set forth in our briefs, is a question of state law. I don't believe there's any dispute from the appellee about that issue. When we're looking at questions of state...
I must say I understand the appellees to dispute that and say that that is the central issue in the case. They say the plan has its own definitions and state law is irrelevant.
State law.
I don't think you can say there's no dispute about what seems to me the central disputed issue at hand.
I think the point I was making is that they agree that state law applies. They may reach a different conclusion about whether it's needed.
No, I don't think they agree with that at all. Maybe we're not reading the same brief. And they say, the bankruptcy judge said, the district court said, this plan has its own definition of the word partner. This is just not a question involving the Uniform Partnership Act or any other provision of state law. Now, that may be right or wrong, but that's a dispute in this case, and one can't make it go away.
Your Honor, Mr. Behrens is not disputing the term partner. What we're disputing is how that term is applied to his status. In order to figure out whether or not Mr. Behrens was a partner for purposes of the plan, I submit we do have to look to state court. Primarily, the law in state court is to figure out what the intention of the parties is, look at the substantive terms of the agreement between Mr. Behrens and Altheimer and Gray. We've cited several cases for the proposition that the labels don't control, and I'll come back to that point shortly, and Illinois cases that it is substance over form when we're looking at terms like partner. The facts, just very briefly, were Mr. Behrens was a unit or equity partner of Altheimer and Gray until March 5, 1999. Mr. Behrens resigned as an equity partner at that point. He did not become a non-unit partner at that point in time. He became something else. Mr. Behrens signed an employment agreement with Altheimer and Gray, and he became an employee of the law firm as opposed to those other two categories of unit partners and non-unit partners.
Of course, one of your problems is that that agreement calls him the partner, and the bankruptcy judge understood this plan to mean that partners, for purposes of this plan, are all those people that Altheimer and Gray called partners, without regard to whether state law would call them partners or whether they would be partners in a suit under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Now, why is that a misunderstanding by the bankruptcy judge of the terms of this plan?
Two reasons, Your Honor. In the plan itself, there is a definition of employee. That's section 1.47. And what it says is employee means an employee, associate, of counsel, agent, representative, or manager of the debtor before or after the petition date, other than a unit partner, a non-unit partner, or retiree. So the answer to the question is...
You haven't addressed my question in any way. You know what the meaning of the word partner is in this plan. The bankruptcy judge and district judge understood that word to be all those people who Altheimer and Gray called partners. My question remains, what's wrong with that understanding of the meaning of the word partner in this plan?
Under state law, that term...
Oh, dear.
Your Honor, the answer is, if you look at Mr. Barron's employment agreements, the fact that they may call him a partner doesn't change what he really
is. It doesn't make him a partner for purposes of state law. That is, it doesn't make him generally liable for all of the partnership's debts. It won't make him a partner for purposes of Title VII law, which distinguishes between partners and employees. But I keep coming back to the question, what is wrong with the understanding that for the purpose of this plan, the word partner has the meaning assigned to it by Altheimer and Gray and its lawyers?
The problem is it's a label that doesn't apply to Mr. Barron's.
Well, let me try this from a different direction. Why isn't a good starting point the labels that Mr. Barron's used in his claim that he submitted to the bankruptcy court, which repeatedly refers to him as a non-unit partner?
Your Honor, I agree. Those are labels. This court in Autotech, which we've cited, makes it very clear that references to labels alone aren't going to control.
Well, it's a somewhat different situation here, right? Because there's at least some dimension of fair play here. You're saying, if I understand your argument correctly, that the other creditors are out of luck because they didn't object to your claim, right? They didn't file a timely objection to your claim.
I'm not suggesting the other creditors are out of luck. I'm suggesting that the creditor trustee in this case...
Who presumably is acting on behalf of the creditors, okay? But but your point is your claim stands unobjected to, correct?
Yes.
All right. And the response is there was no point in objecting to it. Why should we fight over this partner's claim when there's going to be no money for the partners at all? And, in fact, Mr. Barron's calls himself a partner in his claim. Now, what's wrong with allowing somebody to rely on that label that Mr. Barron's himself applied?
It begs the question to say that they didn't object because it's labeled partner. Mr. Barron's underlying proof of claim relates to his employment agreement. So I believe the creditor trustee, knowing about Mr. Barron's claim and that it related to an employment agreement as opposed to the partnership agreement, it was incumbent upon them to object to Mr. Barron's claim.
But why was it more incumbent upon them to look through the label that he applied? What's unfair about just relying on Mr. Barron's own label?
Your Honor, if that was true, then in a proof of claim, anyone could claim a security interest. Review of the proof of claims is a very important part of the bank.
What you're suggesting, though, obviously they have to be reviewed, and they have to be reviewed critically. But what you're suggesting is they should have realized he had a better claim than he labeled it, right?
I'm suggesting that they knew the substance of his claim related to his employment agreement, regardless of the labels.
So he should be excused and, in fact, should be able to take advantage of his use of that label. The argument we've got on the other side is that they were lulled by your argument, by your strategy, into not objecting to a claim when there might have been perfectly good reasons to challenge it.
In the employment agreement, which is attached to the proof of claim, which is not terribly long, a page and a half, the language, a quick reading of that language would tell someone that Mr. Barron's wasn't a unit partner or a non-unit partner.
But he's called a partner.
Except it says he has no rights in the partnership, no capital contributions, all the things that would suggest that whatever the label was at the top, which was employment agreement contract partner. If you read through that very short agreement...
But why didn't he just file his claim as an employee?
We used his employment agreement as the basis for his proof of claim. And in the proof of claim, we reference each of the items to his employment agreement where appropriate. In a couple of cases, the investor money, his claim related to something else.
Summary of claims of Mark H. Behrens, contract partner and non-unit partner of Altheimer and Gray. That's the label, right? All right. That he put on his claims.
That's Mr. Behrens' claims.
You're into your rebuttal time, you know.
I'll sit down unless there's a question. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Childers.
May it please the court. Mr. Behrens had a written agreement with the debtor in which he was called a partner. Mr. Behrens admits in his reply brief that the debtor and he represented to third parties after signing that agreement that Behrens was a partner. Behrens filed a proof of claim in which he called himself a non-unit partner. Behrens was advised by the debtor before and after confirmation of the plan that he was being treated as a non-unit partner under the plan.
Did you ever collect any money from him on the contributions that were required for the non-unit partners?
We did not collect money from him, Your Honor.
Did you try?
I do not believe that we tried to collect money from him. If money had been collected, he would have been entitled to the broad provisions of the settlement agreement under the plan and the release. I believe that the plan administrator determined that it wasn't worth going after him for that money. Behrens was advised by the debtor, was sent the plan and disclosure statement, which notified him that non-unit partners were expected to contribute to the funding of the plan and that his claim was classified as a Class 11 partner and Class 9 investors claim and that he would not get any distributions. Behrens failed to object to the plan. 3 years later, through a motion to have his claim paid, Behrens essentially asked the bankruptcy court to reclassify his claim, which was properly rejected by the bankruptcy court and then by the district court. Now Behrens is asking this court to reverse the bankruptcy court and district court's determinations that Behrens is a partner for the debtor, of the debtor under the plan. That request should be rejected and the district court should be affirmed. The real question here, and this is how both the bankruptcy court and the district court approached it, is whether Behrens is a partner for purposes of the plan. Behrens wants to change the definition of partner in the plan to be the same as the definition of partner under state law and ask this court to consider instead whether he is a partner under his agreement with the debtor for purposes of the Illinois Uniform Partnership Act. What Behrens is doing, in effect, is making a collateral attack on the debtor's plan. The plan deliberately included unit and non-unit partners in the definition of partner, so it is irrelevant whether Behrens is a partner under state law. Quite simply, the confirmed plan defined Behrens as a partner and classified his claim as containing partner claims. Behrens did not object to that classification, and now Behrens is bound by that classification and the definitions in the confirmed plan.
Ms. Childers, could I ask you to elaborate on something in your brief? You asserted that the debtor told Behrens before the plan was filed that his claim was treated as a partner claim under the plan. How and when did that happen?
In the debtor's statement of financial affairs that was filed with the bankruptcy court, he was notified, it was indicated that he was a non-unit partner. He was also served the disclosure statement and the plan prior to confirmation, which notified him that he was a non-unit partner.
And all claimants received copies of that?
All claimants received copies.
Okay.
It is foundational bankruptcy law that an order of confirmation binds the debtor and all creditors to the terms of a plan. If this were not so, creditors could sit back during the bankruptcy and confirmation process, and then after a debtor have classified their claims in a certain way, they could undo the finality that the plan confirmation process provides, like Behrens is trying to do here. Section 1123 of the Bankruptcy Code allows the debtors to define and classify claims in any way that it wants to under its plan. The debtor defined Barron's as a partner, just like it told Barron's it considered him to be, and classified Barron's claims as partner claims. Barron's did not object to that classification at the confirmation hearing or appeal the confirmation order. If Barron's disagreed with that classification or the definitions in the plan, he had to object then, not 3 years later, through a motion to have his claims paid. Barron's failure to object or to appeal the plan's confirmation binds him to the terms under Section 1141 of the Bankruptcy Code and through principles of res judicata. Because the plan was binding on Barron's, its definition of who was a partner is binding on Barron's. Whether Barron's was a partner to the plan boils down to two things. First, whether Barron's was a partner at any point between June 30th, 2001 and the petition date. And second, whether Barron's was assigned profits and losses of the debtor pursuant to the partnership agreement. As to the first criterion, the agreement between Barron's and the debtor was still in effect on the petition date. That agreement unambiguously provides that Barron's was a partner. The opening sentence provides, Barron will be employed as a contract partner. Paragraph 1 says that...
Which is about as clear as mud.
Paragraph 1 says, Barron's shall continue to be a partner of the firm. And the title itself says, contract partner. This court should give effect to that clear and unambiguous language, just like the bankruptcy court and district court did. Also, both parties understood Barron's to be and acted like he was a contract partner. As to the second criterion of the definition of partner in the plan, it is undisputed that Barron's was not given units in the debtor. Barron's attempts to contort the definition by placing emphasis on the phrase pursuant to the partnership agreement. That phrase merely explains that the partnership agreement is the source of the units. It comes down to this. The difference between a unit partner and a non-unit partner is the happenstance of units. A unit partner has them, a non-unit partner does not. There don't have to be rights under the partnership agreement to have units and thus to be a unit partner or a non-unit partner under the plan. That a non-unit partner not be a unit partner occurs as a result of the non-assignment of units. Notably, Barron's could have been given units under his partnership agreement. I'm sorry, under his agreement with the debtor. But since Barron's was not assigned units pursuant to the partnership agreement, he meets the second criterion of the definition non-unit partner in the plan. Because Barron's is a non-unit partner to the plan, he was a partner during the date set forth in the plan, he was not a unit partner, and he was not assigned units in the profits and losses of the debtor pursuant to the partnership agreement. He is a non-unit partner to the plan. Any challenge now to the plan's definitions of partner by Barron's is barred by the principles of res judicata. Barron's knew he was a partner and knew the plan treated him as a partner. As a partner and as a person who had filed a proof of claim, Barron's had standing under Section 1109 of the Bankruptcy Code to object, and he should have objected to the plan if he disagreed with the definition and the classification of his claims. But Barron's didn't object, and as such, Section 1141 of the Bankruptcy Code binds him to the terms of the confirmed plan. Since Barron's was a partner, his claims are either Class 11 partner claims or Class 9 investor claims, neither of which are entitled to any distributions from the creditor trust. Barron's wants to place the burden on the debtor to have notified him through a claim objection as to how his claims were being treated under the plan, indicating that it's somehow unfair to place the burden on him. There's no requirement in the bankruptcy code or the bankruptcy rules to have to object to a claim before plan confirmation, or for that matter, to tell a creditor how its claim is classified under a plan. Further, requiring debtors to object prior to plan confirmation would severely diminish the ability of any Chapter 11 debtor with many unsecured claims to confirm a plan, because it would impose a duty to establish the viability of every claim prior to confirmation or risk forfeiting the ability to object after confirmation. In any event, objecting to Barron's claim wouldn't have provided him any greater notice, because he already knew the debtor considered him to be a non-unit partner. And more importantly, he called himself a non-unit partner in his very own proof of claim that he filed in the debtor's case. Barron's knew he was a partner and classified as a partner. He received the plan and disclosure statement, and he should have read those documents so as to understand how his claim was being classified and being treated under the plan. so that he could object at the confirmation hearing if he disagreed with the plan. Since he did not, he is bound by the terms of the plan because, as a matter of law, Section 1141A of the Bankruptcy Code binds all creditors to a plan, even if those creditors did not participate in the process. In conclusion, the Bankruptcy Court and the District Court correctly framed the issue as one of plan interpretation and neither abused their discretion nor erred when they concluded that the plan controls whether Barron's is a partner of the debtor, found that Barron's is a partner of the debtor for purposes of the plan, and interpreted the plan and the confirmation order to treat Barron's claim as a partner claim under the plan. Therefore, the District Court should be affirmed. Thank you.
Ms. Childers, could I just ask you a quick question here?
Sure.
This disclosure document that was cited in your brief as notifying Mr. Barron's how his claim was classified, were you required, does bankruptcy law require you to provide that kind of notice that classifies all the claims and tells individuals how their individual claims will be classified?
Your Honor, you're required under the Bankruptcy Code to send that document to creditors, and it explains the plan and discloses mm-hmm. how the plan is, the terms of the plan to creditors.
Okay. Does it say, Mr. Barron's, your claim is going to be treated as a partner claim?
It does not say, Mr. Barron's, your claim is being treated as a partner claim. It doesn't tell individual creditors how their claim is specifically classified. Because the debtor had notified Barron's in advance that he was a non-unit partner by the Statement of Financial Affairs, he would have known that he was a non-unit partner. And as well as prior to confirmation, the debtors had notified partners of the potential to settle under the plan and told them that they could, pay money and receive the broad settlement under the plan and the broad mm-hmm. release. He would have known that he was a partner.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there other questions?
Thank you, counsel. Anything further?
Thank you, Judge. Judge Hamilton, I want to respond to one of your questions there. The Statement of Financial Affairs that counsel referred to, that's a document prepared by the debtor, filed at the beginning of the case, that discloses certain information. It's on file. It's filed in every case. It can be amended whenever. The other documents, though, that were being discussed, the plan and disclosure statement, and then the request to Mr. Barron's to make a payment to obtain the release, I'll briefly address those. The plan and disclosure statement, as the court knows, is the debtor, and in this case the committee's, joint proposal about how claims would be classified and how they'd be treated. There's no determination in the plan and disclosure statement that those things have happened. In fact, until the plan's confirmed, it's like an offer to be accepted later on. The reference to Mr. Barron's receiving documents to sign, to get a release, and to pay money, he did, in fact, receive those. He made it very clear to Mr. Botica, who was representing Altimer and Gray, that he did not consider himself to be a non-unit partner, and therefore he wouldn't sign the settlement agreement and wouldn't pay money.
Where do we find that?
I don't have a specific reference that I can point to, Judge.
Was it in the record in before the bankruptcy court?
I don't believe so, Judge. The other point I wanted to make was that Section 3.1 of this plan is entitled Criterion of Class, and it says a claim is in a particular class only to the extent that that claim qualifies within the description of that class. In other words, when we look at the classification provisions of this plan, the first provision says that a designation of a claim in a particular class is only good if the claim actually qualifies for that class. So our argument has been that Mr. Barron's claim isn't a partner claim. It's an unsecured creditor claim or an employee claim. And I think the plan acknowledges that the decision on whether a particular claim fits in a class is a decision that can be made later. And that is what has brought us to this court, because the creditor trustee has challenged Mr. Barron's claim, the status of his claim. Finally, again, I would like to remind the court that this court has said that these labels, and I admit freely that his employment agreement refers to contract, are not dispositive of his status. Are there any questions? Thank you. We ask this court to reverse the decisions of the district court.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.